welcome back to See You at the podcast where two unqualified football fans try to sound qualified about football and football economics and transfers and future plans for massive football clubs that involve thousands of people scrubbing the floors and whatnot. La-da-da-da-da. Yeah, football's complicated at the minute. But tell you what isn't. My wonderful co-host Sean. Seanie, how are you doing?
Well, yeah, no, I've had a very simple weekend. I haven't had to watch Manchester United yet, so all going well.
Yeah, I mean, I had a good weekend. I'm not going to lie. My weekend was good. Drank plenty of tequila in the metaphorical sense. I think that's the new phrase. You're not drinking the Kool-Aid, you're drinking the tequila when it comes to Arsenal now. But I'm sure it wasn't all like sort of a doom and gloom weekend in your house leading up to the Man United game, because one team that is supported in your house did quite well this weekend. And I thoroughly enjoyed watching this game, but a massive, massive win for Leeds United this weekend. What do you reckon?
Tops, absolutely brilliant performance from Leeds. You know, they had so much, like the obvious bits that you would expect from a sort of Jesse Marsh / Red Bull system, so much energy, so much pace. They were just swarming Chelsea whenever they got the ball. And yeah, they were just phenomenal. And it's hopefully a performance such as this dispels a lot of the myths around Americans and their, you know, performance in football, and we can stop going to them. But you call it soccer, you know, and let them play, because Aronson was brilliant. I thought Tyler Adams was man of the match and put in one of the most Kante-esque chase down and tackle every ball in the midfield performances I've seen in a long, long time. And yeah, Chelsea had no answer to them. Koulibaly got sent off. He got his first yellow very early on and just lost the head then for the second. So yeah, I think Leeds will be all right this year if they continue to perform like they did there yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, I think we spoke about it at the time, but Tyler Adams was a get. He was being looked at by a lot of elite clubs in Europe and you know, for Leeds to get him. And listen, let's not make any mistake about it. They paid good money for him too. But I think in that sort of RB system with Jesse Marsh and the belief that they seem to have as a team, like the unity that they seem to have front to back seems great. I was so, so impressed. I mean, Jack Harrison seems to be the talisman now. It's like the guy who's going to take the ball. He's going to carry it forward. He's going to get a few roars out of the crowd, and he's going to really push that team forward, because he's a Leeds guy now. Well, that's if he's still at Leeds by the end of the window. But he is a Leeds guy. And I was just so, so impressed with Leeds and the way they operated. I mean, you know, you can almost name every player on the pitch was great. Robin Koch was great again. Melier was very impressive. I know I've had my words about Melier on this podcast, and that I don't think he's quite up to scratch sometimes, but he was very good. And if he continues in the vein that he continues, he will meet everyone's expectations. But yeah, super impressive. But Chelsea, on the other hand, yuck. Jesus Christ. They were awful. They seemed sluggish and slow, lack of desire. Their coach was moaning about having to take the bus for a lot of the coaching staff, whereas the players had to take the plane. Oh, how horrible. Like, I think Thomas Tuchel is quickly becoming one of the most insufferable people to listen to in the media. And yeah, like I said at the start of the season, he is in my predictions to be gone by the end of the year. Or his head will just explode. But yeah, not impressive for me. You got any more thoughts on this one?
Yeah, like I think, well, there's... You could argue that, you know, you saw the benefits of getting your players in early, because so much of that Leeds team were signed in June. They went on a full preseason together, so they understand the system inside and out. There's been no late joiners. I think Tyler Adams was the latest acquisition to the team, or maybe Sinisterra, but sure, he came off the bench. So they've had the time to bed the players in and work through the system. Chelsea, on the other hand, with their hodgepodge recruitment, hasn't exactly gone seamlessly to build a cohesive team that, you know, Tuchel wants. Let alone his sort of insufferable personality, as you say, Owen. I find some of his tactical decisions very questionable. Like, what about Gallagher's year at Crystal Palace makes you think he's going to be suited to the deep-lying sort of holding position? Like, Leeds ate him for breakfast every time he got the ball, poor Conor Gallagher. Like, it's not a system, a position that suits him, and he was left very exposed in the middle of the park. And then, in a response to that, they took off every midfielder bar Loftus-Cheek and threw on Pulisic and Ziyech, and it was all just wingers. And this age-old thing that they still have no strikers. So, Tuchel, I think he's losing the rag and losing his head, even behind the scenes in his decisions, because it's not... Well, I suppose they did well against Spurs last week and were unlucky to draw that game, but they look so off it in every department against Leeds this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's just not so hot in general. It just isn't up to scratch. And I did have a thought on the Koulibaly thing, and I mean, this is something, the way that games are going now, there is the whole let it flow system that they brought in last year, and now there is sort of a hurry up thing going on. You know, they want the game to be as quick and fast as possible, having multiple footballs on the sideline to get in play and stuff. But I've sort of seen it in reported by multiple people that it is sort of a tactical Fowler's dream, in a sense, to be able to bring someone down and then play goes on and then you sort of get away with it. Now, Koulibaly did get sent off, but there was one occasion, I think it was his first yellow card on the right-hand side, where he gets turned and sent to the shops, and all he does is reach out, yoink, and it's not a goal-scoring opportunity, but it's also like a really, really good opportunity for Leeds. And I can't help but think, like, you know, we have a sort of similar thing that was brought in GAA over here in Ireland a few years ago, the black card. And obviously rugby has the sin bin. Is there a sort of middle ground, you reckon, for occasions like this where players are stopping attacks in such a purposeful manner?
I don't think there's any point to add that into soccer, like, or football, you know, English football as opposed to Gaelic football. Like, the sin bin works in rugby. The black card in GAA, I don't think it's been universally praised as a measure. And also, you know, GAA and rugby are far more physical games, where those kinds of sin bin or forced substitutions are for more violent play, or even though the game is more physical and it's for excessive physicality in those games, whereas soccer doesn't really have that, you know, thing problem to face. So yeah, I just think yellow and reds is fine. With, you know, Koulibaly maybe should have got sent off sooner. There's always that question of,
yeah,
if he didn't, you know, does the time in which he got yellow carded, the first yellow, come into effect, and, you know, it's early in the game, is the ref not going to give you all those kinds of intangibles? So I thought he was lucky. I don't think he was lucky to stay on as long as he did, but I was surprised he kept the head as long as he did, because Leeds really had him rattled.
Yeah, and I think Leeds as a whole were just so impressive, you know, just so, so impressive. And I mean, they've still got players to come back from injury. I did enjoy Jesse Marsh's sprint down the touchline, Tuchel-esque. And he seemed quite frustrated that Tuchel was even able to be present at the time, which I also think is quite a bullshitty thing, that's a possibility. Like, I mean, how do appeals take that long? It's either like a yes or a no. You should almost be able to give it on the spot, but Jesse Marsh seemed quite pissed off, and Leeds played like a team that were pissed off and in the right ways, and they really channeled their energy really well. And if they can continue in this vein, I think, you know, why not dare to dream? Top half finish could easily be achievable if they continue with the quality and the pressure that they have. But it is early on in the season, so I mean, it's hard to say quite yet. But speaking of catching up, Newcastle played a big game against Manchester City this weekend and got a very good result, despite even the typical Manchester City fight back happening. But what'd you make of this one?
Sky threw up a stat that City, of since May 2021, in games in which City scored first, they won 30 and drew the other. So they've never lost a game in which they've scored first in the past 18 months. And the fact that they went ahead and the goal Newcastle conceded so early on, I was like, oh, okay. I had thought Newcastle might be more involved in this game, but I guess not. City are just going to cut them apart. But then Newcastle dominated City for large portions of this game. Like, they were so on top. City didn't have an answer. St. Maximin had Walker for breakfast. It was just a top, top performance. And, like, the goals they scored were fabulous. And they really just had all the answers for City. Now, it was impressive to see City just kind of fight back and switch on a sort of level of, you know, they're kind of usually quite cool and chilled out. I think, you know, in how they win games and sort of perform, it's never that manic, but the way they fought back was full of kind of, it's pretty intense, like, fight back, I think, led by Haaland, who was decent in this game and, you know, got his goal, of course.
Yeah, I think Man City as a whole, like, they like, this is like, I know they drop points, but this is a sign of their strength that they can even be faced with a performance like that from a Newcastle team and still be like, you know, still come back. And, you know, if the game went on for another 10, 15 minutes, you'd have to think they would have taken home everything. But yeah, impressive from Newcastle again as well. I mean, Callum Wilson, I don't want to say he's underrated, but he is a super number nine. Really does everything you need him to do. And also, some of the players that they've brought in have just started performing really well. I mean, Nick Pope between the sticks is a massive upgrade on anything that they had before. And if they can take something out of this performance and apply it to their other games again alongside Leeds, I think the middle of the table could be so, so competitive. Far more competitive than even I thought it would be. And you look at the likes of what Brighton are doing right now. So, so impressive. On the other hand, City look like a machine, but does this make sense when I say it? They seem to have a lack of personality. Does that resonate with you, what I mean by that?
Maybe you need to expand on that, because, like, you know, I would say Haaland's got quite a lot of personality in terms of my understanding of what you mean.
Yeah, I mean, like, Haaland does, but what I'm saying is their identity now is just machine. Like, it's not like, I feel like they've become the vanilla flavor, you know what I mean? And, I mean, if Phil Foden learned how to cut the ball back a bit more, they probably would have won this game. And that is the City thing, is cutbacks. And it's just like, I don't know, like, I just feel like maybe they will drop more points this season just from the fact of sometimes people will scalp the machine. You know what I mean? I don't get so, like, they are so, they've gone beyond powerful now. They're just sentient. Like, you play them, give them your best. What's it? What's the quote? It's like survive if you can. You know what I mean? I wonder, will most teams just resign themselves to losing to City and then, you know, just go balls to the wall and try anything, and then maybe somehow get a result? I don't know. Like, maybe no personality doesn't really make sense in the way that I say it, but there's something a bit bland. Maybe it's just that they're too good, or they're too robotic. I don't know, but it'll be interesting when they come up against the more, air quote, vibey teams and see what happens. Like, I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, Crystal Palace against Man City. I think that'll be fun. Like, you know, but hey-ho.
Yeah, I think, to use your machine analogy, Owen, I think City do have a slightly, you know, leaking fuel pipe or something, because Ake went off injured, Diaz came on. Their centre-back pairing don't look as settled, and I do wonder, is it because they're, you know, they would have been quite exposed on the counter because of how City played naturally, but the fact now that Walker and Cancelo are pushing so infield as, like, basically midfielders and also overlapping, are they just even more left on their own? And, like, everyone in City's team seems to be pushing up a bit more and playing those true balls into behind Haaland, who I must say, actually, I was very impressed with just some of the moments he produced, even where he didn't score. I think it's not since the mid, not, you know, the noughties of the Premier League, have I seen a striker who doesn't kind of, who rides the challenge and just relies on his pure pace to beat the man and latch onto a through ball. Like, I feel like nowadays any sort of contact and you go down in the hopes of a free kick or a penalty or whatever, but, like, he rode the pressure from one of the Newcastle centre-backs, used his strength, used his pace, got by, and he was one-on-one for the keeper. Now, he didn't convert, but I was just very impressed. I don't think since Drogba have I seen a player, or a striker more so, use their body so effectively and not just, and be physical about it and not be sort of a pushover. So I think he's added personality, to be honest, to the team, but I take your point that it is a bit robotic at times. They can switch it up, though. Like, you know, Haaland's goal was pretty kind of dirty striker's finish, but that assist from De Bruyne was glorious for the Bernardo Silva one. So they still have that, you know, scalpel about them to just cut a team open on a moment's notice. So, yeah, Newcastle had a lot of answers for them, but they just couldn't hold on against what is, you know, one of the best teams in the world.
Yeah, I guess, like, you know, I think we have a tendency to forget about Kevin De Bruyne, right? Because he's just so, like, sort of like Man City themselves. He is so brilliant all of the time. Like, there aren't many that have been better than him in midfield in the Premier League, ever. Like, he is that good. He's always that good. He can do things that other people can't, simple things. And it's just so, so impressive. And I think maybe, I'm not sure if people are aware, or Man City are even aware themselves, of how much of a loss it will be when he finishes up, because there doesn't seem to be a player on the planet who can do exactly what Kevin De Bruyne does. It's absolutely incredible, astounding. But yeah, if I could continue my analogy just ever so slightly, you know, when in, like, typical action movies, when there's some big bad machine or robot or something, and the only way to, like, kill it is for, like, to overload it with power and it blows itself up. I wonder, is that what's happening with Man City? Are they just attaching all sorts of pieces and bits and everything? And will they see a drop off at some point this season where they just almost, like,
they'll have Arsenal to, you know, buy the excessive power, to use your analogy.
Yeah, we'll get a loan of power off them. Wouldn't mind a few more Man City players. Seems to be working quite well. But on the flip side, encouraging from Newcastle in terms of the steps that they want to take. It's been a while since we've seen a Newcastle team have that out and out quality, considering, you know, we thought they might get relegated last season. So looks like they're taking the step that they need to take. The problem is there's tons of people alongside them, again, as we already mentioned. So in the next few weeks, it'll be interesting to see how that comes out in the wash. Is, you know, which form is temporary and which seems to be continuing towards the start of the World Cup. But speaking of form, one team that both of us predicted to do quite well this season and have not been doing well, I think they've sort of been blessed by Manchester United starts the season taking all of the media shine away, because if this was them on their own, I think there would be a lot of pressure on West Ham United. It's been incredibly poor. And I don't know, do you think there's any particular reason for it?
I'm struggling to fully put my finger on it. I wonder, is it the disruption at centre half, in terms of they've Zuma, who's their only kind of fit centre half, Craig Dawson's injured, they signed a new centre half from the French league. I can't remember his name, and he got injured in pre-season, and then they signed a kind of utility player in Thilo Kehrer, not John, as David Moyes was quick to wish he was named John. I don't know why he had such a problem calling someone Thilo, but anyway, I don't, you know, Thilo's performance wasn't the best in that West Ham game, but I don't know. I feel like they needed to take the handbrake off a little bit and just start Scamacca, because anytime I've seen him play, he seems to have a good presence in the box, and like from those fleeting moments, despite not scoring a Premier League goal yet, starting him from the front might really help them. Otherwise, I think they're not. West Ham have relied quite a bit on playing as a cohesive unit through large parts of the season, you know, and working as a full team from the front, and it hasn't quite been that way. Suchek's form has also dropped off a bit, and is Rice more exposed in the midfield? And I'm just struggling to really put my finger on it, because they were unlucky against Nottingham Forest, in fairness, but at the same time, they should have won at least one of these first three games, and they haven't done. So, I don't know, I think it's a little bit back to the drawing board, and start playing some of the new signings from the start might be their first fix, and hope that those guys can kind of perform better than some of the lads who are starting at the minute.
Yeah, the question is the sun setting on the Backstreet Boys? You know? Yeah, I mean, they also brought in Corney, you know? That's one that I forgot about. The Scamacca thing is a weird one, right? Because we've talked about this a few times. It's very, very rare for an Italian player who plays in Serie A to leave Serie A and do well. I should add as well. That is incredibly rare. You know, even the best of the best in Serie A struggle when they leave. I think of Immobile as a prime example. You know, someone who everyone and their mother would have bet on to do well and didn't. And there's a lot of expectation on Gianluca Scamacca to do well. And it's like, geez, it's such a big step, you know? And I think that step is growing. And as Premier League clubs' ability to sign players from the continent grows stronger and take essentially whoever they want, at the same time, that step will become bigger. The level of quality will go up. And players before that, you know, years ago, would you'd expect to come in and make an instant impact, that might take a little bit longer. I mean, Scamacca's come in on big money. It's tough, right? And, you know, Mikel Antonio was such a big part of what made that West Ham side so interesting. And now it seems like he's being phased out. Yes, he is he's no spring chicken, but it is interesting to me how that's gonna play out, because I think they're I think they might be in a little bit of trouble. I mean, the team that they got beaten by looks to be doing all right. I mean, Brighton seem to be really turning up the heat, and are going to be a tough ask for everyone to play, I think, at this in this league this season. How they do it, I've no idea. But yeah, I don't want this to become the Graham Potter podcast either.
Yeah, like, I think West Ham might be somewhat in a period of tactical uncertainty in terms of transitioning from sort of the Antonio-led team to one with Scamacca, where, you know, he might need the likes of Corney and some sort of pacier wingers to provide service to him than Antonio did, who did a lot of... He was quite a unique player in how much he pressed and ran, or, you know, what he brought to a team. So I think West Ham are trying to sort of develop on their tactics, whereas Graham Potter has just absolutely bedded this Brighton team in, and they just don't skip a beat anymore. Like, that might also be partly why West Ham have done so poorly. Like, their first game was against City. It's a tough ask. They had to go to Nottingham Forest for their first game back in the Premier League after 20 odd years, and then coming up a very slick and good Brighton team. Like, the goals they're creating, the way they're playing, the fact that they haven't missed Cucurella or Bissouma at all, they've just transitioned perfectly. Why was the new left-back they signed, Estepunin or whatever, just came on and looked the business and looked to slot in well, and Gross is back playing some of the sort of top football we've seen him play a few years ago. Like, I thought his assist for Trossard, if De Bruyne hadn't have done what he'd done in the Newcastle game, that Gross kind of layoff on the twist was just beautiful and, you know, assist of the weekend for me. Yeah, like, it is hard to not become the Graham Potter podcast because they're just going so well. And whereas I thought they'd struggle to sort of follow up their good performances last year, they seem to be only improving. And I'm really, you know, they feel comfortable selling Neil Maupay. Danny Welbeck's playing unbelievably. They have some sort of, some players who I would know a lot about and I don't think most would know about. But like Caicedo came in from nowhere and now everyone's talking about him. And they have that guy, Undev. And they have a few bodies that are just kind of relative nobodies. So I'm really interested to see how they get on when they come into the team. And yeah, like, they're just a top, really work hard. Everyone understands their job at Brighton. And Graham Potter's the mastermind of it all. And yeah, so Brighton is always going to be a tough ask, I think, for the rest of this season anyways.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned Bissouma and Cucurella. And it's too early to say, right, because they could go on to have great seasons from now on. But, I mean, they haven't looked super shiny in their new teams, you know. And they've gone out for good money on both ends. Brighton have brought in good money and their recruitment system seems to be super sharp. So, I mean, the way they're setting themselves up, and I mean, we've brought this up a few times, they've got a nice stadium, they've got a good manager. They seem to be long-term setting themselves up to be Premier League stalwarts, which, yeah, I mean, good for them. The Graham Potter thing isn't going to last forever, but if they can continue in this vein of having good recruitment, excellent selling. I mean, they got 50 million out of Arsenal not too long ago for Ben White as well. They have assets that people are going to want to get their hands on next summer too. You can already pick them out, like you mentioned Caicedo. I'm sure someone's going to want Tyreek Lamptey. Someone might want Sanchez. You know, they've got some really, really decent players. I do appreciate the hilarity of Neil Maupay perhaps going to Fulham, and Maupay and Leno playing together after their famous coming together a few years ago. That launched the career of Emiliano Martinez. So that one is quite funny. But yeah, Brighton are just so good, so admirable. And yeah, I don't know. Knowing the Premier League, we could be sitting here next week and you're like, oh my God, Brighton were hammered. But right now, it's looking slick.
But just on the sort of point about Brighton's long-term view, you know, though, several few seasons ago now, when they just stayed up with Chris Hughton as manager. Was it Chris Hughton? The Irish international. Oh God, who was it? Yeah, Chris Hughton,
yeah,
sorry.
Yeah, Chris Hughton as manager. Was Newcastle before, and then he went to Brighton, right?
Yeah, and he kept them up, and he played quite a stodgy form of relegation battling football, and the ownership, you know, took the view that whilst Chris has done really well for us, he got us promoted and he kept us up. I think it's time we develop, and, you know, the first season under Graham Potter wasn't all roses, but they're taking the sort of, they've been making calculated risks the whole way along, and they keep paying off because they're being sort of smart about every move they make, bringing in a tactically intelligent coach who just keeps bringing every team he's worked on for to a new level, be it Östersunds, Swansea in the Championship, and then Brighton. And then even the recruitment. Like, Brighton have a sister club in Belgium. Like, did you know that? I only discovered this, you know, over the summer. Like, Brighton essentially has a feeder club. Like, you know, everyone knows about the Man City network, but Brighton has a partnership with the Belgian team where they loan out their players. Like, I keep talking about this guy, Undev, but the only reason I know anything about him was because he scored loads of goals in the Belgian League last year. And the whole point was because he was going through a Red Bull style for, you know, ascension plan, but with Brighton and this club in Belgium. So, and I'm sorry, I can't think of the name off the top of my head, but they just seem so modern, and every decision, aside from Graham Potter, but every decision at the club's hierarchy is very intelligent and very well made. There's a reason Newcastle poached their director of football, like, so they're just a very well-run club.
Yeah, and it seems like that that sort of thing is going to last as well. Doesn't seem like that's something that they lost, at least short term anyway. But if we're to move on to one final subject, maybe another club that we gave too much credit to at the start of the season, and another one of my picks for a manager that will go this season. It really looks turgid at Leicester. It really, really looks bad. I mean, they had Wesley Fofana in the stands. It looks like he's off to Chelsea. They had to bring off Tielemans quite late. Bring him on quite late because he wasn't in the right frame of mind. And then they just got beat. And it seems like James Maddison is pulling them out of the fire as best he can, but it's just not enough. And yeah, I fear for Leicester. I fear for how they'll get on, because while other teams have taken massive steps forward, they don't seem to have taken steps at all. What do you reckon?
Yeah, I'm really struggling to put my finger on exactly why they're just kind of capitulating in all of these matches. They're, you know, they were a team that won the FA Cup 2 seasons ago and everything was going well. But why, you know, the first red flag was when Kasper Schmeichel just left kind of out of nowhere and just went off to Nice. Like, that was a shock. And now that there's all the, you know, everyone knew going into the summer that Tielemans was on the way out. But I wonder, like, it was probably in Leicester's best interest to get rid of him early. So I'm wondering why he didn't go early. And is it because, you know, vulturish clubs like Arsenal are waiting to just make sure Leicester are desperate and sell him for the lowest price possible, perhaps? And it really seems these moves, the fact that both two sort of big players for them want moves away, seems to have really impacted the squad as a whole. It, whatever, you know, a lot of people regarded Leicester as a well-run club, but the fact that they put themselves in a position, as I understand it, where they can't sign any players without selling first, seems silly to me. Like, you kind of need to know that you're going to buy players every summer, especially in the Premier League, where you always have to be investing and always improving. When you have one of your star players is a year left on his contract, wants out the door, when there's a massive offer sitting there for your up and coming centre half, who, might I add, is part of a team that seems to be leaking goals left, right and centre, so that's a lot of pressure to put on that young Fofana. So, and also, is this just a case of Rodgers losing the dressing room again? Do you know, like he did with Liverpool? Has he reached his shelf life? So there's just a lot of, I think, off-field issues combining that have really had a negative impact on Leicester this year.
Yeah, I wonder, did Rodgers miss his chance to jump? You know what I mean? Did he miss his chance? He might have wrangled his way into a bigger job like a Spurs or someone along those lines. But yeah, it looks like, I don't know, he really has to show his mettle as a manager, to use the materials that he has and make this count. But I mean, you know, following winning the Premier League in 2016, they should have gone on and kicked on and become the team that is just behind the rest of the top six. But I mean, you look at
everyone. Well, sorry, I'm just jumping in there. They kind of did, you know. From winning the Premier League, they've done essentially everything they can.
Of course.
Sustainably. Like, they were best of the rest for 2 seasons, 3 seasons running.
Yeah, but I mean, the fact that we're worried about them not being there now is kind of mad. Do you know what I mean? I mean, it should have been a permanent ascension to best of the rest contention. Now, whether that's a comment on the Premier League as a whole now, or whether that's just a comment on Leicester, I'm not sure. But, you know, we sort of view, in the last little while, we view West Ham as that club. And, like, how Leicester have slipped down to this, sort of under their own noses, in a sense, is sort of scary. Because everything seemed to be going so well and so perfect. And they seem to have a squad that a lot of teams would be envious of. And now, like, you look at the table and you think, despite our preseason predictions and this only being 3 games into the season, I look at a lot of those teams and I'm thinking, Crystal Palace looks sharp. Newcastle looks sharp. Brighton looks sharp. Are Leicester anywhere near them? I don't know. United are going to be coming out of that position in 19th. They're not going to stay there. You know what I mean? So there's going to be teams that just poof, like the table as it sits now. And I just, like, I think every game as it stands for Leicester is going to be tough. And it's, you're going to really want to see their bottle. I mean, Jamie Vardy has signed a new contract, but is also getting on quite a bit now. So I just wonder. Sorry, go ahead. Yeah, no, I was just going to say, are they a mirror for Southampton as well?
Yeah, I do wonder, though. I was just looking at Leicester's team sheet from the game against Southampton, and I noticed, like, Johnny Evans and Amarte started at centre-half. And it was only a year ago, I'm fairly sure, that we were praising the fact that they'd signed Sumare, they'd signed Vestergaard, they'd signed Daka. You know, they seem to be putting that transition plan in place, succession plan in place. They couldn't have foreseen the sort of rapid drop-off in Soyuncu's form. You know, he was being talked about as a top six defender not too long ago, but his form has dropped. You know, Castagna, since signing, has been injured a lot. Ricardo Pereira is never fit. He always seems to be suffering long-term injuries. And Sumare hasn't worked out. So I just think it's a combination of whilst making all the smart moves, I think they've just been victims of all of those smart moves kind of going wrong at the one time as well. And, you know, when things aren't going well, I'm not sure Brendan Rodgers is proven that he's the best manager for that kind of situation.
Yeah, but what, like, I mean, there are smart moves and then there are moves that appear smart. You know what I mean? They seemed at the time to be signing players who were in this sphere of, like, you know, that's a player that you should get if you want to be smart. You know what I mean? And they seem to sign those players. And it doesn't look like right now that any of those are paying off particularly well. I just wonder, you know, like, I really saw something in Kelechi Iheanacho at one point at Leicester, and I really thought they should have really put their chips on him. And then you look at him coming on as a substitute, you know, towards the end of the game. And I just think, why not? Like, now's the time to take your risks and back a few people and give them a shot. Because at the same time, Jamie Vardy, as amazing as he is and was, he's 35. And he's not Cristiano Ronaldo. He's not an athletic freak. He drinks however many Red Bulls a day, self-professed. You know what I mean? So, I don't know. I'm not sure about Leicester. I'm worried for them. I'm very worried for them.
They haven't ever truly transitioned away from Jamie Vardy. Like, the fact that he's starting all these games to start this season, I would think this should be the season where he's moved to the bench and kind of comes on and scores a big goal or here or there. And the same could be said for Johnny Evans. I feel like Johnny Evans kind of, whilst he's been fantastic for Leicester, he shouldn't be starting as many games as he is now. And yeah, it's just, he was exposed by Arsenal last year. You know, Arsenal ripped them to shreds this year. So, like, they were there to kind of pip Arsenal and Tottenham to the post not so long ago, and they've fallen foul of that. So it's a shame to see, but I don't think they'll get relegated necessarily. It's just, I think some hard decisions are going to be made soon enough there, because it's not going well.
Out of interest, would you have any idea as to who you'd put in place as Leicester coach? Because I don't really, to be honest. Like, I don't have anyone that comes to the top of my mind to replace Brendan Rodgers, which is a bit scary as well, right? I mean, listen, we're not recruiters either. But, like, I can't think of even anyone that's, like, slightly available or on that level, you know?
The name's gone out of my head. But, like, my head kind of jumped immediately to Lucien Favre, but, like, he's a coach in the French league now. But, what was Dortmund's coach last year who got the sack? I can't believe.
Oh my God. How's that evaded me? He managed Mönchengladbach before, wasn't it? Marco Rosa?
Yes, Marco Rosa, that's the one. Yeah. But someone like him, maybe? I don't know. Someone off-piste who was doing well before they moved to a big club too soon. Something like that. I don't know. That's the only thing I can think of. Unless they go crazy and, you know, bring in Sean Dyche, which would be mental. But
that would be mental.
Stranger things have happened.
What about Mauricio Pochettino? Like, what about Pochettino? Well, like, you know, listen, I reckon if you gave him a buzz, I gave him, like I said this already a few weeks ago, but an in back into the Premier League, I reckon he might take it. I don't know.
There might, yeah. If West Ham continue to falter as well, I would be interested to see what happens there. So that's actually a good fair call out. Where will Poch end up, if be it the Premier League in the first instance?
Yeah, I think it will be the Premier League if he's to go somewhere. But yeah, Leicester, I don't know. Should they just like make Vardy manager? Just like throw it all. No, you know what? Solskjaer. I just looked it up. I see reports, but Solskjaer.
So a word on Southampton in fairness, because
but yeah, no, in fairness to Southampton, big win. I think that those two teams, when I saw them together, I'm like, these two teams are close together in terms of quality.
Is it a passing ships in the night kind of moment for Leicester and Southampton, possibly? You know, the fact now Southampton got a win on the board might, you know, help them in their bid to stay up and not get caught in a relegation scrap. Where do you think Hasenhüttl's at now with the old doomsday clock on? How is he faring?
I don't know. I still think they could just get hopped off any week, you know what I mean? And if they get like a 5+ defeat from anyone, I feel like that has to be it. Because then that's just one too many. You know what I mean? Like, let's have a look at their... Before we go, let's have a look.
It won't be next weekend, I'll tell you that much.
Are they playing United next weekend?
Yep, that's it. And they play a style of football that United have been really bad at defending against these past few weeks.
Okay, so they've got United at home, Chelsea at home, then they've got Wolves away. Brentford at home. Maybe Brentford could hop off them in a few weeks' time. Then they got Villa away, Everton at home, and then they've got Man City at the Etihad in October. So let's put that down as a marker, right? Will Ralf Hasenhüttl still be Southampton manager by the end of October?
I would think the marker and the line of the sand will be if he's still manager after that Everton game, because, you know, I don't. You could nearly argue that Southampton facing City is like having a 2-week break for the new manager to come in and bed in his new system, so because the results won't be expected. So I'm going to keep my eye out for October 1st as the possible deadline, the doomsday of Hasenhüttl.
I'm going to say November 1st, only for the fact that I think like they'll play City and City will beat them like 10-0. Haaland will like start dancing on the posts and everything, and like, you know, City will start like, Grealish will have a haircut in the middle of the pitch and there'll be all sorts of shenanigans and they'll just hop off them and then he'll get sacked, because how many managers can take that many catastrophic losses and still survive? The fact he's still there now is kind of mad. But that's it for now. We've got a big game tonight. The reason we haven't talked about Manchester United versus Liverpool is because it hasn't happened yet. It's happening in a few hours. And then I think maybe this week we also have the Europa League and Champions League draws. Are they this week or next week? I'm not sure. I think they're coming up on the horizon.
They're finalizing the qualifiers this week.
Yeah, so
probably
we're going to know that pretty soon, which will be really interesting, of course, for us. We know Thursday nights are the best night to party. But then, yeah, other than that, we roll on. We're going to see... who comes out on top between Manchester United and Liverpool. But one thing that I do know is that Arsenal will remain top of the league for at least the next few days. And that much makes me smile. Just enjoying it while I can, because it's not going to last. So, but yeah, no, best of luck tonight, Shawnee. I hope it's a good game. I hope you see more than what you've seen in the last few weeks. And until then, my friend, I'll see you out there.
I'll see you out there.